Hello, and welcome to another episode of Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s, which is how you pronounce that word,
while
we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I am, and have always been, and will always be, Matty Luchansky.
I'm pretty sure I'm Clayton Ashley.
I think, try to get to the bottom of that today. This week on the show, it's loosey-goosey time. This week on the show, it is episode 23 of season 1, Fallen Hero, in the week of May 8th, 2002.
I'm curious if you looked much into this, but we're going to have an interesting thing for the next episode. Because I think...
The movies, you mean?
No. Well,
no.
This episode and the next episode both released on May 8th in a doubleheader.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm cooking up some different culture stuff, maybe. I thought, you know, what if I ever talked about a video game? Because that's technically
We've
part
not
of culture.
We could do like the last 6 months of video
games.
Yeah,
real quick.
Want.
So look forward to that.
We do a little rundown.
Next week.
That's a really good idea. Let's start off. There's not a ton of... Oh, so I'm the science officer for this episode. A conceit we brought up and then promptly stopped doing. I'm the science officer for this episode, which means I will be taking us through the wacky world of culture and news and stuff. Whereas Clayton is our captain and we'll be talking about this perfectly fine episode of Star Trek.
Average.
This perfectly average replacement level fucking Star Trek episode we watched.
Yeah.
That I watched at a nail salon while I was getting a manicure. Okay. So not a lot of interesting stuff happened this week, but on May 5th, the WWE, perhaps you've heard of them.
They're culture.
Well, Clayton.
Technically.
They used to be something. They used to be the WWF until they got sued bajillion times by the World Wildlife Federation and had to change their name to World Wrestling Entertainment.
I forgot that was the
reason.
They
used to be the World. My whole life, they were the World Wrestling Federation. But those motherfuckers with the pandas on their letterhead had to come and screw things up for, I'm looking here, cultural heroes Vince and Linda McMahon, who have never done anything wrong.
Yeah. What is the deal, panda people? It's just wrestling. That's all they do. That's all they're involved in.
Yeah. I mean, what else have they done? What else? What have?
Is this when Linda is on the Connecticut school board or something?
Linda McMahon, I just want to double check because I feel like she ran for Connecticut governor when I was living.
Or senator or something. Actually, I might have
ran for
that was the later in the decades.
I can't remember when, but she ran in 2010.
Okay, yeah,
for the Senate. Anyways, and she didn't make it. Anyways, Linda McMahon, great lady. We love her and all of her great works. So that's what the Wrestling Federation does that week. They changed their name to WWE, which is big. It was big news, I recall, at the time. The same week, TNA Wrestling is founded. Total nonstop action wrestling. Clayton, you're more into wrestling than I am, I think. Do you have any recollection of the TNA?
Oh, I can't believe you thought I might be more into it. I have only been.
We just have almost every single mutual friend we have is a freak about wrestling.
Yeah.
So I just sort of imagine that if I...
It's totally fair.
The group
totally
of people fair. I know you from are all wrestle freaks.
Yeah.
Are we the only two that aren't?
Yeah, my wife knows way more than
Tremendous,
I do.
Tremendous, yeah.
Well, and I
have only... any thoughts about TNA?
Through osmosis. Well, I was going to make a joke about if the porn industry was also going to sue for the name, but...
That's really good. I mean, that's clear. But the thing is, that was my next point. If we're talking about the way American culture was and like, just like the rank... sexism and like day-to-day life in America, the Wrestling Federation being called TNA is probably one of those things where you're just like, oh yeah, that's just how things were.
Yeah,
that's just how things were. They'd call the Wrestling Federation TNA. So that's pretty cool. I remember a couple weeks ago I mentioned that Marie Le Pen's father had gotten he's suddenly gotten further in the French elections than anyone thought possible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's 2 weeks now later, and Jacques Chirac demolishes his ass in the general.
Yeah.
Thus banishing the far right in Europe to the margins forever.
So, and France continues to be socialist wonderland
to this day. Do you remember, Clayton, did you ever own a Compaq computer?
We did, actually. Yeah. Our first Windows PC was a Compaq.
A very common occurrence. But on May 7th of 2002, Compaq officially became part of Hewlett-Packard Inc.
Damn.
So say goodbye to your Compaq computer, never to be seen again. And just to put a little fine point on the end of this sort of end of history era of politics, that's right, on May 11th, 2002, Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical Cats closed at the New London Theater in the West End, London, after 8,949 performances, which is a lot of performances.
So in the, like, what happened in May 2002 searches I did last time, I saw that and I was like, Maddie will cover that one. I know Maddie will cover that one.
The Cats was running for like 20 years.
Yeah.
but it just feels like, oh, this is the end. This is the end of Cats.
This is the end of Cats. It's not an important cultural touchstone anymore.
Goodbye. Goodbye to Cats. And we'll never think about Cats again. Cats came back. I love Cats. Yeah. My favorite thing in the world. I will say, if and when it finally transfers to Broadway, Cats the Jellicle Ball rips ass and is so good, and you got to go see it on Broadway. It's really good. And they fixed Cats.
That's what you said. They fixed Cats. Not in the way. Not
in the way that you think if Cat would be fixed. It's like pun not intended, or is it?
Or is it?
Because you often, when you are transsexual, you become sterilized. They fixed Cats in two of the three ways, I mean. Okay, so that's the news. Like I said, not a ton going on right now. It's kind of a fallow period in the news. There was a bunch more escalation stuff in the 2002... The Israel's actions in Gaza and the West Bank in 2002. Yeah. If memory serves, there's sort of hostilities for the next couple of years. And then 2005 is when Israel withdraws from Gaza completely and turns it into an open air prison. So keep an eye peeled for that. Why don't you? Let's talk about the television. Let's talk about the TV. So, Fallen Hero. I'm just going to talk about Fallen Hero.
Uh-huh.
You could talk about the other one.
Yeah.
So Fallen Hero has got a five. It's got a five share and a 3.2 rating. Congratulations to Star Trek Enterprise for, of course, yes, once again, beating the vile Dawson and his horrible creek.
That stinky, disgusting, ugly creek.
That stinky creek. That motherfucking awful piss-soaked creek.
Do not drink it.
Do not drink.
Do not drink Dawson's Creek.
Beat it. Beat it. Beat it barely. Got it. Its ass completely trounced by Ed. And a rerun of that 70s show, which is so depressing. And of course, My Wife and Kids, according to Jim, a juggernaut. 60 Minutes 2 with an episode about how the CDC is tracking deadly bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
7.6 rating. About doubling the Star Trek. So, you know, there's lots to see and learn in the world of television. But we did, I'll say, we beat Dawson.
I mean, we always have that. I think we need to be prepared for that to pretty much be the only achievement Enterprise makes. Because I don't know if the series ever, like, takes off. I don't think that's a thing that happens. It just kind of trudges along.
It certainly beats the vile Dawson enough times. If you were to watch TV late in the night on that day, you could, of course, see Tom Green on the Jay Leno show.
Fun.
Do you remember Tom Green, Clayton?
Is he animation? Who is that?
No. He was just a weird guy.
Oh.
He was on MTV all the time, and he was a weird guy, and he would sing little songs, and he did a song that was on MTV all the time about how his butt was on stuff. He was a Canadian.
Okay.
A big tall man. It was very the height of comedy in 2002 was this guy, Tom Green. It's really... Go watch My Bum sometime.
That makes sense.
He briefly married Drew Barrymore. He's in one of the Charlie's Angels movies as a one-night stand that Drew Barrymore has because they are married. And it's like, wow, what a fun joke for two lovers to have.
It sounds like the kind of non-political content that Jay Leno would like on his show.
Yeah. So let's go to the box office, shall we?
Let's all go to the movies.
That's so.
Oh, I know it's coming. I know it's coming. Oh, it's good.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's right. At number 63, making.
Oh, yes.
$25,000 in its first week. The Mystic Masseur.
Say it again.
The Mystic Masseur. Like a massager. In 1950s Trinidad, a frustrated writer supports himself as a masseur and soon becomes a revered mystic in Politico.
Damn.
It's a comedy. Okie dokie. At number 74, making a robust $983 on two screens.
900? Not 1,000. 900.
Nope, $983 on two screens. The 2002 re-release of the film Lagan. You ever seen Lagan?
Is that an anime?
No, it's a Bollywood film from 2001. I don't know why it was re-released in America in 2002.
Oh my God.
But it was. Maybe it was just the American release of it. Anyways, Lagan, Clayton.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to talk about it because it's the best movie of all time.
Ooh.
It's like a 4-hour masterpiece. And it's about like Indian guys learning how to play cricket and then beating the colonizers at cricket using a ragtag team of just guys from around the town.
Oh, hell yeah.
And it's like there's one of every kind of guy in Indian society and they all have to come together.
Oh, man.
To make a pluralistic cricket team.
Oh.
And they all become friends and they hug and high five. And they sing a song called Chale Chalo, which translates roughly to Let's Go, Guys.
Let's go.
And it's just like literally them like on a rock doing yoga together in the fucking sunrise, singing like, Let's go, boys. It's the best movie of all time. It's like fun nationalism, which in India never went sour or bad.
It's also a sports movie. And the best kind of sports movie, which is ragtag group of a pluralistic team defeats the stinky old men or whatever.
Man, maybe I'll make you watch Lagan. Maybe I've only seen once, but it rips so much ass. It's so good. It is one of those rare Bollywood movies that a lot of Americans have seen
because
it's also like a history movie.
Because the poster, so I did recall like... That
yes,
did.
A lot of people watched it in school.
Oh, okay.
But it's also 4 hours long. That was it's like 2 weeks of school.
Yeah, I was going to say.
but great movie.
That's cool.
Lagan.
I wonder what specific theaters in America that was that they got to re-release that.
That's a really good... Well, it says 2002 re-release, but maybe that's just the American... release of it.
I was curious.
I simply don't know.
I think I was the name I was thinking of the anime Gurren Lagann. Different thing.
So that's number 52, a film called Unfaithful that I've simply never heard of.
Feels like a couple movies are named that. So
a New York suburban couple's marriage goes dangerously awry when the wife indulges in adulterous flirt.
Also sounds like the description of quite a few movies.
Oh, that's the fucking... No, this is a... what's it called? It's Richard Gere.
Oh, well, that's an actor.
And Diane Lane.
Oh,
I wonder if it was... It must have been a limited release movie. Mm. Oh, yeah, it's only on two screens. Maybe it's at a festival? Anyways.
Yeah.
What else is going on this week? Not a lot, because at number 11, we got a movie called... You ever seen Hollywood Ending?
No.
That one, I never saw. It's a Woody Allen. It's a Woody Allen.
Ah.
That I never saw. I think someone gets killed in it or fucking something. I don't know. Maybe not. I don't care. It's Woody Allen. Get fucked. and of course, at number 7, we have the film Deuces Wild, which
Deuces Wild
is a
Steven.
It's a Steven Dorff.
Yeah.
Brad Renfro, Matt Dillon, James Franco, Frankie Muniz joint.
Wow.
And Norman Reedus. Wow. What a film. Look at this fucking poster.
Which one? I'm looking
at the one
with
the girl on it. The one with Fruza Balk on it. Oh, Fruza Balk had such a crush on you. Here's a tagline for you. Before gangs had guns, they fought with guts.
He's got a gun on the poster.
Anyways, it takes place in Sunset Park.
Oh, cool. New York City, baby.
Hey, that's the Big Apple, in my opinion. So that's at number 7, making a mere 3 mil. Because here's the thing. At number two, we've got, you know, our friend from last week, the Scorpion King.
Yeah.
The rookie, still around, Murder by the Numbers, Changing Lanes, still hanging out. Because the decks have been cleared, Clayton.
Oh, yeah? Why?
Why is that?
What big movie could possibly clear the decks in
Mother,
May?
Mother fucking Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 1. $151 million in its opening weekend.
Good movie.
Good movie. Good movie. Good movie. I love Spider. I love Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. It's Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. It's, I prefer number two.
Yeah, of course. Because that could be one of the best superhero movies of all time.
It is the only good one ever made.
Yeah. Well,
it's the only good superhero movie that is also a good movie.
I could think about that, but that's the easy answer for the best movie that also happens to be a superhero movie. That's a fair answer.
But this is the motherfucking Godfather trilogy of superhero movies.
Also like the qualities.
For real, where it's like one's really good, two is the best movie ever made, and three is better than you remember, but still pretty bad.
Also kind of many times, what were they thinking?
What were they thinking? I mean, I kind of love Spider-Man 3.
That's not always a bad thing to ask that question.
I like it. Anyways, Spider-Man. I love the film Spider-Man by Sam Raimi. I recall I was late to this film.
Me too, actually. I saw it in the discount theater.
So I was late to go see it. So I was going about 80 miles an hour on the highway on Route 25, driving to the movie theater in Trumbull, Connecticut. And I got a ticket.
Oh, no.
And I missed all the previews. Oh. But I did get there, and I did have to go to remedial. I had my license less than 6 months, so I had to go back to driver's ed.
But you got to see Spider-Man.
But I got to see Spider-Man.
That's a good story.
And I did.
I guess I was late in a more like, my parents at that era were still a bit like, we should make sure you can see this movie in a theater. It's PG-13. It might be a bit much because that's how they thought about movies. So they saw it on one of their date nights. And then they were like, yeah, it's okay. You could see that. And so by that time that was in the discount Fox theaters in Topeka, Kansas, out by the mall that was already dead at that time. And it's like a core memory I had of seeing a movie in a theater and just being like, holy shit, this is...
Yeah,
because I that was actually before I had really gotten into Sam Raimi. It was actually right around that time I was friends with some big horror fans.
Yeah.
And then how much that movie, it's obvious why it's a good as a superhero movie is because it leans into the campiness that is inherent with the idea of what a superhero is. Mm-hmm. And of course, somebody who made gory slapstick over the top cinema. It's a natural match. Mm-hmm. I still think about the Doc Ock. It's the sequel, but I still think about the Doc Ock like surgery horror scene.
It's the surgery scene.
But in this one, Willem Dafoe is a standout in just how fucking nuts he can be. And
he's so good.
He's such a good villain. And you know, that perfect like fallen villain, you sympathize a little for him, but it's excellent. And I remember it has that 9/11 connection. Do you remember?
It does. Yes, please.
So I'm trying to remember if it ever even like released before 9/11 or it was just like, oh shit, we gotta like, don't use that trailer. But they had a teaser trailer that was honestly an excellent teaser trailer and the like doesn't actually reveal anything from the movie. It's just get hyped. There's a Spider-Man movie coming.
And
it's like New York City. It was like a helicopter trying to get away from cops. I think they robbed a bank or something. Yeah. And it's like thrilling. You don't know what kind of action movie is, but you just assume it's another like action thriller bank heist movie. And then the helicopter gets stuck between two buildings, the Twin Towers,
where are they?
And they're stuck. It's stuck in a spider web.
Oh my God.
And then it's just like, you know, play a little of the theme, show the logo. Spider-Man is a movie that they're making. I think they just briefly show the costume even, which is, they did a great job with that costume.
Yes.
And then that actually reminds me also of the one choice that I still think Sam Raimi was right to make. But
please.
The fact that Spider-Man's goo comes out of his wrists.
Oh, that he's not like a super genius fucking scientist teenager?
Yeah. It's such weird body horror to add to Spider-Man, but I think it works. I think that's a real nitpicky thing to like hung up on.
Yeah,
I think it's perfect in those movies as much as it is kind of gross.
I think it's good and smart and good. And people who are mad about it are dorks who should try having sex once in a while. like me. I've had sex, and that's why I think it's good.
Yeah, that's the reason.
Because it looks like cum, Clayton.
That's
and yeah, that's God. Yeah, these movies are so good because it's like the soapy, like Silver Age stuff.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which like is never adapted. Yeah.
Yeah. Damn. Well, I wonder if we'll get to talk about Spider-Man 2.
I wonder if we'll ever...
I think it comes out pretty quick.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the movies. Mm-hmm. That's it for the culture, which we will revisit again next week.
Or
next episode. So it's I want to leave a little bit of meat on the bone for you.
Thank you. I'll gnaw on that.
Unless you want to talk about the masseuse or whatever.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Because we don't have a dince, but let's get to it anyway.
Hey, why not? Oh, are you the captain?
I'm the captain. Here we go. So, let's go.
So climb aboard.
All right. So this is episode 23, Fallen Hero. It is, as I mentioned, I don't know if they were trying to like rush the season out or they were starting to give up on its ratings, but they bundled it up. So this was a 2 hours of Star Trek, and the first one you got was a diplomacy heavy Vulcan episode.
This is an episode I can only describe as we needed to save some money. The episode.
It's
a real sort of standing around the bridge kind of episode.
Yes, with only a few scenes that kind of make that worthwhile. It's like obviously a lot of Star Trek gets talky, but
yes,
this is not a series specifically that's good at that. And this episode kind of shows why. We start off with T'Pol basically saying, "You humans aren't fucking enough. Let's go to Risa." Risa? Is it
Risa?
Risa.
Which is good to me.
It was.
She's like, you guys need to get laid by the way.
Yeah. Pretty interesting. But then, you know, it's been a long time since any of these guys have boned.
Getting from there to here. I had an incredible realization.
Yeah.
Because I was in a bit of a rush watching this one. And I hit for the first like 20 minutes of it. I was playing it at 1.5 speed.
Uh-huh.
And it's a long story. I'm having a very crazy day over here. And I will say, Clayton, play that song at 1.5 speed sometime.
1.5.
Because it goes fucking hard. It's a good song.
I love it when that happens.
I think it's a good song.
It'll be the next Jolene where you just pitch shift it and speed it up in a different.
I also have a quibble.
I have a lore quibble.
Uh-huh. Do you want to take a seat with me here in the
quibble corner?
In the quibble corner spelled with a Q.
That's good.
We're introducing a new segment called Quibble Corner.
Yes.
If you can get a stinger for that, that'd be tremendous.
I will do it. This is the one I'm going to do something for.
Good.
Quibble Corner.
My quibble is they say, let's go to Risa because we got to get laid. And the whole episode, they're talking about like going to Risa.
Yes, yes, yes.
Risa does not get mentioned until Next Gen, which means that they forgot about it for 200 years or whatever.
No, wait. I just because I looked at some of the future episodes coming up, I think they do go, right?
Yeah, that makes it even. This is what I'm getting at.
Oh.
Is that this series is like, let's go to Risa, and they go to Risa, and then they never mention it on the original series. Which means for like 150 years, no one's like, let's go to the dick sucking planet. Like, I feel like if there was a dick sucking planet,
yeah,
Kirk would have been there right quick.
He would have never left. It's fine. Maybe it implies that something terrible happened there and humanity was not allowed for centuries.
Yeah, maybe something bad happens on Risa later. Something bad happens on Risa in New Space Nine. Where there's like terrorists.
Oh yeah, yeah, Risa. They destroy the weather machine.
Yeah, and it's like Worf is there to Dax is like, hey Worf, you gotta get your dick sucked, and she takes him there, and then he's like, I'm gonna fall with some terrorist fundamentalists, by the way.
Deep Space Nine.
I'm just real quick gonna found Risa and Al Qaeda.
Yeah.
Real quick.
It was almost like Greenpeace, isn't it? I'm trying to remember.
No, they were like prudes.
Oh, okay.
They were like, hey, yeah. No, we shouldn't be sucking and fucking so much. Why are we the planet's depository for all sucking and or the universe's depository for all sucking and fucking? And Worf is like, yeah, I hate to suck and fuck.
Yeah.
This is the kind of commentary I bring to the show now.
It's important commentary.
Because I talk about cum. I talk about sucking and fucking. I talk about having sex.
Yeah.
Getting the goo on your finger and your wrists.
No one else is brave enough.
No one else is brave enough to talk about this one. Star Trek podcast. I'm the only one.
And to kind of continue this specific point about Ryza is, you know, in the next scene after the music, we get Trip wearing that Hawaiian shirt that we teased last time.
God, this is so good.
Unfortunately, going to be the only scene he's wearing it. But I enjoyed the fact that T'Pol immediately just like demolishes him. Just
T'Pol.
T'Pol. T'Pol. T'Pol. T'Pol. T'Pol. T'Pol. T'Pol. T'Pol.
T'Pol.
T'Pol.
I need you to issue a topology.
I need to issue a topology there.
Topology.
Because I'm really complimenting T'Pol. Just ethers him. Just immediately. She
fucking, it's like, from downtown.
It's amazing. Someone
she posterizes him.
But this also led me to like how he's talking about the planet and how he's implying that Archer, you gotta go. And it's like, is Ryza a like sex worker planet? No shame, no judgment, or is it like just the place for hookups? And I'm curious about that. Like,
the answer is yes.
Yes, I guess to both. It's just the place where you go, whether you're paying for it or not, you will get sucked and fucked.
It's like, what if like the Bunny Ranch was also Hedonism 3? He's Hedonism 2. Sorry, Hedonism 2. There is no Hedonism 3 yet. I wish on this show, when they do, you know, they put in little Easter eggs like reunification or whatever, like 10 years from when the show is airing.
Yeah.
They should talk about how the founding of the resort Hedonism 3.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know. That's just what I would be doing if I was making fiction about the future, which I never have and never will.
Mm-mm. So I guess to actually get the episode truly started.
Oh, we're talking about the episode?
Yeah. Everything that we're interested in as far as Ryza gets thrown out the window because...
Goodbye, Ryza.
Ryza. T'Pol, you know, it's hard to pronounce things sometimes.
I couldn't even get my own name earlier.
This amazing trip that Trip is looking forward to.
Good.
Having
good pun.
So much just going to Bone Town. It's sorry, Trip, because the Admiral's calling. And
the Admiral calls when trying to get sucked and fucked.
Yeah. And they need the Enterprise to kind of be an Uber. We've got to pick up. Vulcan Ambassador Villar.
I fucking hate escort quests.
Yeah. Needs a pickup from Mavar?
Macklemore. Macklemore.
Mazar.
Debbie Mazar's house.
I think we may have mentioned something about this. I hate when they do a thing where like the main character's name is Villar and the main aliens are Mazar.
Oh, and there's also another one where like the ship they keep calling is the Sharan. And I'm like, Sharan's here? And they're like, no.
Yes. These all annoyed me. And it's fucking sci-fi. Names can be anything.
But I will say, for instance,
yeah,
I could be on a boat right now and know a Sean and a John.
That's fair, but this is like a different alien and human names or people names should be different from spaceship names. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, listen, man, there should be all sorts of ways to vocalize, and yet there should be all sorts of ways for aliens to look, and yet the Mazarins or whatever are just guys with like a what looks like somebody glued a Hot Wheels track to the side of their face.
It's pretty short.
And then they all have top knots.
Yes, then top.
I mean, top knots with a streak of gray.
Because everyone has the same hairstyle on an alien planet. Duh.
Yeah, you know when you go to Earth and it's Earth culture and they speak Earth language and everyone's got Earth haircut.
And Earth fashion.
And Earth fashion.
Yep, that's how it works.
I've been to Earth, Clayton.
okay, they start preparing for this important ambassador. T'Pol is given Archer strict rules. T'Pol! God. Topology number two.
Let's get the count. Let's get the stinger for topologies. Ding, no. Yeah.
Topology.
She's really like, we got to make sure that her quarters are spick and span. It's got to be a real clean. It's Hoshi's donating it. It's very nice, but there's a little like joke here about T'Pol is like giving a sniff test.
Yeah.
Because it smells like human.
Humans, by the way, stinky.
To Vulcans. That's important.
Remember that they're stinky.
They arrive. And a part of this that will be consistently annoying to Archer is that the Vulcans, the Admiral by way of the Vulcans, they're not talking about why. It's just pick up this person, this our Vulcan ambassador. She has been ejected from her job on the planet. So they get there, and this guy is not, this Maserite is also not telling them much, just that she has been accused of some criminal conduct. And we are getting her off this planet as fast as possible. Don't even land. We're sending a ship with her already. And so she arrives. And the first thing is that she shakes his hand.
What?
Like some kind of weirdo.
Like a weird person who pays a little too much attention, a little obsessed with humanity.
Yeah. Excited to practice English. It's important to note she's not using a translator here. It'd be cool if there was kind of like a way we knew that, but the translator is just a magic device. So, but she has to say it. And I feel like she's doing a little thing here with how she talks that makes it imply she doesn't, she never like gets a word wrong, but it just kind of sounds like it's not her native language.
Which
is, you know.
I mean, I think this lady does a pretty good job.
Yes. And speaking of, this is frequent Star Trek star Fionnuala Flanagan.
Yes. She's on Star Trek all the time.
Yep.
I think she is cool. She is also a big IRA backer.
She's in a lot. Yeah, I missed that. I'm glad we got that in.
Listen. To me, she was like a buddy of Marty McGinnis.
Okay.
and Jerry Adams.
Damn, cool.
That's cool.
That's good to know. I was gonna point out that she's Data's mom.
She's Data's mom, but also in real life, her husband was like an Irish nationalist guy, and they would have like Irish nationalist house parties in Hollywood.
Sick.
Because it's cool to me.
And yeah, she's also in, so that was Data's mom, I think, was in Next Generation. She's also in Deep Space Nine.
Yep. I remember her also from Lost.
Oh, cool.
Film Waking Ned Devine.
And she is not, well, I'll mention the other, but she's actually not the only like frequent Star Trek appearance, which to me also kind of reads as a cost-cutting measure, because at least it said specifically, Fionnuala didn't even like audition. They just gave her the role because they knew she could handle it. And I feel like that saves some money and time.
I mean, one of my biggest issues with Enterprise, the show, generally, is that it doesn't dip into the Star Trek guys well so much, right?
Yeah,
like where's Tony Todd? there could have been more Jeffrey Combs. Like, you know, there's just sort of like there are on Next Gen Voyager, Deep Space Nine. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think there's varying quality, especially on Voyager.
And probably had some synergy there going on like near the same time. But
yeah, they were being produced around the same. I mean, this is only a couple years afterwards, though. Like, exactly. And I just feel like, but they developed this roster of like, you know, people who are on like Star Trek and like sci-fi originals and shit. It's like, it's like we need someone, like get someone from fucking Farscape who knows how to deliver a line normally. And like, I feel like Enterprise has some people like that, but I feel like every character on Deep Space Nine and the other two 90s Trek shows, they just have this stable of people that they would just go to over and over and over who are like great at being like Star Trek dudes and ladies. And they just, on this one, they're just kind of like, So like this one, I like this because they have like, here's like this capable actress that's just in the fucking stable.
Yeah.
And she knows how to act when she's wearing elf ears.
Yep.
Right. So pop them on, get out here, Fiona.
And she talked about like this being a little tricky for her because of the lack of Vulcan emotion. But she also knows what a Vulcan is. There's no like figuring that out, which for actors can be something of a jump.
Yeah.
She's great. Also, she's nice. She doesn't want to inconvenience anyone. She made peace deals with the Andorians. She even attempts to joke about her age.
Oh, she makes a little jokey.
What a nice hippie kind of Vulcan. I don't know what you'd call this. Or this is like, are there liberal and conservative Vulcans? I think kind
of. She's kind of like a weeb, but for humans.
Yeah. Yes.
She's got like some Phloxy energy, which,
you know,
she should have been hanging out with Phlox.
She does mention more about how curious she finds humans. And yeah, that's a good point. She has a specific.
Cause she's been a diplomat since they said she's been a diplomat for like 94 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the first contact was 90 years ago.
Yes.
So it's like she's been around the whole time. So she's like, I'm fascinated by you weird monkeys.
Yes.
You know? Yeah.
Also, in this, they're having all this conversation where she's all nice about this. They're having a mm-hmm. conversation at like a meal time with all the like major bridge officers. And she also sort of admits to being guilty of the charges that that are levied against her. And you can kind of see that this whole ordeal of how much of a weeb she's being, or just like not normal Vulcan, is off-putting to Paul. Thank you. Thanks for the thumbs up.
Ding.
I need the encouragement. And so this following scene is to Paul like taking Velar to her quarters, and they just start talking kind of about this, and Velar just out and says, like, I'm sensing that you're kind of agitated or angry. And T'Pol is like, if you're feeling any emotion, it's not that. And then Velar's like, disappointment. or maybe, I can't remember who says it, but it's like, it's kind of a nice little thing where like the way that Vulcans, even to each other, don't want to admit that they do feel emotions. They just hide them. And that's kind of the point that Velar is making. And also kind of comes up frequently on the show, that they're not so different in this way from humans. They just have a different way of approaching their emotions. But we're quickly to some actual action on this episode, because a Maserite ship finds them and is suddenly like, hey, you know what? We've changed our mind. We need her back. Give her back.
Drop out of warp immediately.
Also, when they're like, let us just, you know, call and make sure that's something we should do. They're jamming them, so they can't call anybody. And then not long after jamming them, they charge up weapons and open fire. So,
and they crucially can't fire back while at warp, because it'll desaturate the gobos or whatever.
Yeah, there's some jargon here, because I mean, it's kind of like...
it's fine. It tracks. Like, the way the warp drive works, there's a field, and you can't penetrate the field with the way the guns that they have. They should be firing handguns out the window.
Yeah, they should have a cannon.
I think that would work.
They
should have a cannon.
So I was going to say, the thing here is it is interesting that they're keeping up with the technology level, I guess, of their lasers, because they actually did have an episode earlier where that was like something new Malcolm was building and it just started to like figure out. And so here he's like, hey, I'm still figuring out getting them to work during warp, but it'll destroy us. So we got to drop out of warp right now to use them.
Yeah.
And they do. And, it's enough to like pew pew, shoot off and scare off this one jet. But before it leaves, I do want to mention that the pilot of this craft, who never gets a name, he's just Maserite Captain.
Yeah.
It's not the guy they saw on the planet. That was a different Maserite. Okay. But he is another very frequent. Yeah, actually not as frequent, sorry, as Fiona Willa, but John Evansville. He is in the Voyager episode 37s. John Rubenstein is his actual name. The actor's name is
Evansville is a town.
John Evansville is the name of the character he plays in the Star Trek Voyager episode, the 37s. I was just curious if that rang a bell.
The 37s.
While you're checking that out, the thing I will note about him is his Wikipedia page for appearances is nuts.
Oh, yeah.
Easily over 100 different TV shows. And I'm not kidding. Name any show from 1967 to 2022. He was probably on it.
Yeah.
Dragnet, the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah. The
Wonder Woman, The Love Boat, RoboCop. They made that show. Yeah. Remember Frasier?
Yeah.
Angel. Like, he is just a consummate working man. He's on so much.
The 37s is the episode of Voyager where they meet Amelia Earhart for some reason.
Cool. That's cool. I love Star Trek.
They find a bunch of cryogenically frozen humans, and that's where Amelia Earhart's been the whole time.
No, that's so dumb. I love it. Why is she also on the other side of the fucking galaxy? All right.
I can't remember exactly how they got over there.
That's so good.
But it was like aliens from the Delta Quadrant kidnapped a bunch of humans.
Okay, yep.
And put them in cryostasis.
Cool. all right, so back to this probably much, much worse episode than the 37s. even after the scene where they have now been chased and shot at, and they're kind of mad about this whole,
Amelia Earhart isn't even there.
Damn. And also Amelia Earhart isn't there. Yeah, but they're pretty mad that this escort quest is now a lot harder because enemies are taking pot shots at them.
Yeah. Also, this is, again, in terms of the cheapness of this episode, every like battle sequence is just like the bridge shaking a little bit and the camera. There's a lot of shaky cam in this
there
one.
There is. That's a good point.
Every time something's happening, the camera's just going like, and they're all like, what?
Yeah. I love behind it's the really scenes good. Of the actors pretending to yeah. get blown
I think
up.
The episode that airs after this one is a lot of location shooting, and I'm assuming this is why.
Yes. And also,
this one's just a lot of shaky room.
That one also has a great. Guest casting, but
yes, it does.
Next time. So yeah, so they're pissed off about how this is going, specifically at Valar. Both, I mean, T'Pol has already got her problems, but yeah. Archer's now like, hey, what the hell? Tell us why this is so important and why like people are trying to shoot us to get to you. And she is not talking. He also, Archer calls the Admiral back, and the Vulcans are like, what the hell is going on? You need to get her out of there. Even though Archer's kind of starting to have like second thoughts about this whole thing. Yeah. Trip and Malcolm have a little stupid talk about the lasers, which is mostly a chance for Trip to bring up the fact that the Nuvian masseuses, that's with a V, have 24 fingers total because it's 12 fingered hands.
12. He goes 12 fingers.
Yeah.
On each hand.
Which I guess would be better than normal.
It's a lot of massage.
Might also kind of feel like a spider.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't try it if I was there. But
damn.
T'Pol is having another conversation. Number three. Topology
bing,
number three.
Bing, bing, bing.
Yeah.
Topology.
T'Pol has a conversation with Valar about Archer.
Yeah.
And she also remembers. Oh, I sorry. I guess I mentioned this. I should have mentioned this later. T'Pol is in some ways disappointed specifically. And I can't remember. I think she mentions this to Archer when they're having their own little chat that she met the ambassador when she was like a child.
Yeah.
And she inspired her basically to go on this path of, I guess, civil service or whatever.
Yeah.
And
doing the science, whatever. Yeah. Sloppy topics.
Academy. And so now in this conversation where T'Pol's like trying to have a conversation and get through to Valar, because I guess I missed this also. The stakes are now Archer's basically like, tell me what's going on or I'm taking you back. Cause this is not what I signed up for. And she's like, I won't tell you. And so they turn around, they're heading back. And T'Pol is like, okay, I'm going to try to get through to her. Talks about how incredible Archer is and how trustworthy he is. And she's, Valar is also like, yeah, he is curious and interesting. He's very passionate. And I'm so infatuated with the humans. And so, you know, I'm not writing him off, but I can tell you trust him. And also, I remember you. I remember you were a precocious little child and presumptuous with your questions, but you actually made me rethink some things. And you know what? I'm going to tell you everything.
Yeah.
Cut. This is one of those episodes where there is a secret and they are not going to let you know anything more about it until you absolutely have to know. But at least, unlike the last time this happened, it's not as contrived because
she's
not giving them the full picture, even what she does have in this conversation.
Yeah. You just sort of like, you just know that like, oh, she was just like up to something top secret, high clearance, whatever. And they're just not telling us yet. And that'll like, whatever. Like, she's not acting crazy. She's just kind of acting like she doesn't want to tell what she's been up to.
And and it's not bad because it's kind of like, you know, I'm slowly warming up to you. I'm being measured about. It's like a good diplomat. Like, I don't know
Do
if
I
can trust you.
Yeah.
And I think some of the highlights of this episode are Valar and T'Pol talking.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they're both pretty good actors in their roles, specifically. And there's some good stuff here about how Vulcans act. A thing that I think starts to come up here, though, is that this episode was in some ways written because some of the writers and people on the staff didn't like how anti-Vulcan the Andorian incident was.
Well, the Vulcans were bad.
Yeah, this was meant to be a kind of like balance. Like, okay, there, you know, we find out in that episode that the Vulcans can be a lot more like political and defensive of their own interests and do things immoral. Yeah. This is meant to be like, yeah, but they're also this. This is also the kind of thing they do, which is try to, we'll find out later what she's doing, but it's more selfless than the Vulcans were being in that other episode. So she comes in to Paul, comes into Archer and says, I had a really great conversation. You know, this is her tune about Valar is completely changed. And now to Paul is trying to convince Archer that you need to trust her. She's doing something high level secret and she cannot tell us what it is, but she's not a criminal. And partly that's because, again, to Paul just trusts her. She trusts that she couldn't actually be doing something wrong here and believes her when she says there's something more going on here. I just can't tell you.
Yeah.
So now we get a bit more action and intensity because history in the making, because they're in pursuit. The Maserites have found them.
Oh, there's three of them
this time. And they're like, oh, the we can maybe get to the Vulcans. They've turned around. They're only so far away. Let's go up to 4.9, warp 4.9. They push it. But the Maserites also go 4.9.
This scene is like someone making fun of Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing. Yep. You don't see any shots of anything. It's just them sitting at a desk. And they're just like, we're at 4.9. And this one's like, they're at 4.9. It's like we're at 4.95. They're at 4.95. It's like we're at 4.97. And they're like, they're at 4.97. And you're like, we're going to 5. And like, so, and then Tucker in the engine room is like, we can't go to 5. And he's like, we're going to 5. And they go to 5. And then they go to 5. And I'm like, this is not television. This is not like exciting to watch.
Exactly. But the music, the sound effects ramping up. It's so clear that they want you to think this is hot shit, and it's not. It's
5 is the magic number. Yes, it is.
And I, you know, there's like a Trip has a reference to like how Scotty would say, like, I can't give you much more. I don't know how much more I can give you. And our pilot, Travis, gets his big moment of pushing the, it's almost like the exact jokes that fucking Galaxy Quest is making about his pilot character, about how like I don't think him specifically, but just how pilots in this show are actually kind of rarely a main character because their job isn't that interesting. It's just pushing the thing forward. Data does it is like his side job in Next Generation, right. And they're like,
forget about that.
There basically is often no pilot, or is there a red shirt often in that series? And this episode I kind of think shows that, because even when it is kind of a big cool moment for him, it's just not that interesting. So anyway,
it's not even anything. And it's also like, I mean, you can make that moment exciting.
You can.
But there's like no, it's literally just like them at the desk and nothing changes.
Yeah. It's like, I feel like
some creaks and groans.
Like the biggest we get a little bit later here, technically, is some fire. But here after the, you know, we go to 4.9, but, you know, it's tough for the ship to handle and we're just barely ahead of them. Valar needs to speak with Archer. And she says, I'm realizing things might fail now. This mission might fail. So I am going to read you in on what's happening here. Now we just get it. There is a criminal element on Mazar. She is going to testify because a group of honorable citizens asked her to. But the Vulcans thought she'd be safer at home. And so they made kind of a cover story. And they thought it'd be more believable.
Oh, if she was disgraced, she'd be more, or like they wouldn't think she was a credible witness and they'd leave her alone.
They'd let her leave instead of like trying to kill her, which clearly they would be willing to, because that's what's happening right now. But she wants to be honorable. She wants to turn herself over. Doesn't want to get all these humans killed. But as we know, Archer is stubborn and heroic. Those are his character traits.
Yeah. He says, I'm sorry, I can't do that, ma'am.
Pick them in his RPG character creator.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I can't do that, ma'am. You're forgetting my two traits.
My two traits. I'm stubborn and heroic, and I'm willing to die to complete the mission. Mm-hmm. Don't you know anything about humans?
Urchin backstory characteristic.
The engine room is shaking like it's never shaken before.
It's shaking so much, Clayton.
They're like, I don't know if we can get to warp 5 because the Maserites are still gaining. Shit's on fire. This is so bad. We need the Vulcan ship to get here faster because, you know, they can go warp 7. You know, that, you know, it's a math problem if we're both going faster towards each other. But
they really do. The Enterprise is moving warp 5 from Mazar to to Vulcan. And the Mazar ship is moving at warp 4.9. How long do they have before the fucking not Shran, but the Sharan can reach them?
Actually, literally, there, I think T'Pol says, like, I can't figure out how long it will, how, when they'll actually meet up. And Archer's like, just do the math. How long was the last reading you had?
I'm like, oh, yeah, 12 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, and they're like, okay, I think it's about 12 minutes. But again, they figure out they can't, like, get any message through the jamming. Oh, we've got help from the diplomat. She's like, we've got a special diplomatic signal. Maybe you can get something out through there. They get something out, but they're not actually sure.
She goes to sit down at the little Hoshi's station, and she goes, it's been years since I've done this. And it's like, it's not that dramatic. You're just changing the channel.
Yeah. Some backstory there. She was actually...
I haven't tried this bad boy in years. Cracking her knuckles.
The message is out, but they don't know if the Vulcans actually got it. They just think they maybe got one out. I think this is where the engine finally, like, catches on fire, and they shoot them, and the nacelle is hit, and so they're pulled out of warp. That, you know, the chase ends. They know they've got less than like 12 minutes if they can just buy enough time. So, quick plan here: Archer sends Valar to sickbay. And the Maserites board because they're like, you know, oh, we can't send her on a ship. You blew up our docking bay. Archer's trying to also say some other things. He's really interested. How fast could you go? You know, you had a really fast ship there. He's just trying to buy time. It's obvious.
Yeah. But
the Mazars, they come over in their ship. They're led to the sick bay. Phlox is there, like, watching a scan happening.
And he's like, sorry, she's not here. She's in the bed from the end of the film.
Yeah, exactly. Also, it's a scan, but the kind of scan that if I interrupt, she'll die.
She'll die.
It's a death. Scan. I don't. That was a little weird, suspicious, but they don't care. If they're like, if you won't take her out, we're just gonna shoot it. And they put like 20 holes in that thing.
They shoot the fuck out of it.
She's so dead. Oh, and before they can do anything else bad, the Vulcans arrive.
Oh, the Vulcan battle cruiser.
It's kind of sick, actually.
It's pretty fucking sick, actually. It's got that cool
ring. It's gigantic, too.
It's huge. It looks like a big dick, and it's got the big ring engine.
So, I saw on Wikipedia some fucking website said it's the 17th most powerful step on Star Trek.
I gotta see the rankings.
I gotta see those rankings, power rankings.
It's gonna be like the Defiant. It's gonna be some like Cardassian shit.
I mean, if you go all the way into the fucking Discovery stuff, then like it's just power rank leveling in that show. Poof.
Clayton, I don't recognize Discovery as a show that exists. You'll have to. I watched every episode of that fucking polished turd. I think it is a worse show than this
Amazing.
Show.
What I'll an say achievement.
That about
Discovery. I guess
they really put their pussy in the name. That suck.
The last bit on this that I kind of liked was just that they first the Mazars are like, hey, it's weird, we just got jammed with our communications, but they're like, whatever, let's shoot this scanner up, and then they shoot it. And that was the first little inkling that the, you know, the fucking Vulcans were about to charge in and shoot everything. And then they pipe in a video feed of the captain, who is the most surprised looking Vulcan I've ever seen. He's got these like wide eyes, but he kind of looks like Vulcan dad. He's
a cool looking dude.
Yeah, I love that.
I like him.
The dorkiest Vulcan we've ever seen is the captain of their like biggest battleship, and he's just kind of like, oh, I hear there's some Mazarts on your. He also just talks very goofy. I don't know. I loved him. And he's just sitting over Archer's shoulder, like he called his dad in, and he's like, my dad's so mad at you guys. And then as they're leaving, look, the door opens and there's Valar. She actually wasn't in the medbay scanner because, you know, off screen, I guess they had a plan. I don't know. But yeah, that's basically it. She's just says some nice things to him, and that T'Pol and Archer have a very unique bond, which I guess is also like it's kind of a quote reference to something said about Spock and Kirk.
Oh, it's the, yeah, it is the, is it the, you have and will always be my friend or whatever?
Well, it's something where they, I don't know when, because I don't even care about this kind of stuff. It's something about them having like a great bond, like something, somebody, I think.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's so clear to me watching this and them being like, well, this is like the first Vulcan human friendship or whatever.
Yeah.
And then like her being like, this will be good for the future of our two species being friends. Mm-hmm. And it's like, listen, man. You already spend so much time paying attention to humans in a way that you don't give a shit about other species that are clearly less advanced than you. Yeah. So, like, just get over it.
Yeah, I think the thing that, as much as I kind of like how much the show explores the human-Vulcan relationship, it does seem odd the Vulcans spent so much time uplifting them when it didn't seem like they were ready. And it did seem too early. But, you know, I guess that's the point.
Hey, that's the point. Well,
so next week, though, look forward to some more action and sets and
to some shirtless lacrosse, if I recall correctly.
Is that what it goes to? Oh, man.
They're playing like shirtless. They're playing like skins versus shirts, desert lacrosse, if I recall correctly.
But it's you know, spoilers. It's got Clancy Brown.
It's got the man, Clancy Brown. And if you don't know who Clancy Brown is. You will, because we're going to talk about him probably for like 6 hours.
Yeah, it's going to be time. Cool. Look forward to that.
I love that man.
But you know what? I heard about this really book.
That doesn't seem right.
I'm looking forward to arriving in my mail because I pre-ordered it. But
oh,
I think it's a cool book that everybody should read.
What's it called? The Bible? You're talking about the Bible?
Am I talking about the Bible?
Are you talking about the Bible? No, I'm talking about your new Bible.
Yes.
Simplicity by me, Manny Lipchansky, is out the day we're recording this, but so it'll be out in stores everywhere when you listen to this, which will probably be in 2 weeks. So in 2 weeks, I'll be done with book tour. So I hope to have been already seen you.
Yeah.
I've got one more event in Manhattan on August 20th, August 20th, I will be at P&T Knitwear with my friends Isaac Fellman and Calvin Kosilke in conversation, and then I will also be at the Brooklyn Book Festival in September.
Heck yeah.
I've got an event. I did plan it. I don't know. But there's going to be an event in Washington, D.C. on September 7th. So if you are in the area of what I call our nation's
good one.
Mark your calendar and more details to TK.
Neat.
Okay. Neato.
We are. Long. It is Temporal Culture War. It has been and always will be.
Temporal? It's Topology Culture War.
I'm Clayton Ashley.
And I am, and will never be. Will ever be, will always ever be, your friend and wife, Matty Lipchansky. Because I'm married to the listener.
That's nice.
And a small ceremony.
Let's go.
Let's go.